You're listening to CJSF at 90.1 FM in Burnaby. CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours. Your voice matters, and our shows are hosted and produced by students and community members like you. You are CJSF.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. We at New Dimensions thank you for your support. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Traditional psychotherapy is wonderful when it works, but it's time-consuming and may be only effective to the degree that the therapist is self-aware and has done their own healing work. Even then, many people reach their limits with what that kind of therapy can offer and need an approach that is more experiential through expanded states of consciousness. Some modalities of this are sweat lodges, vision quests, and breath work. And where it is legal, psychedelics in places like Mexico. All of these healing modalities need a well-trained and trusted guide to help navigate the uncharted territories of deeply held blocks in the body and mind. When diving into this work, there is a need for clear intentions and proper integrations of altered state experiences into everyday life. Today we'll be exploring this path with our guest, Françoise Borzat. Françoise Borzat is a consciousness guide and counselor. She has a master's degree in somatic psychology and is a certified Hakomi practitioner. After traveling the world, she became an apprentice to an indigenous Mazatec woman leading healing ceremonies with sacred mushrooms in the high mountains of southern Mexico. Drawing from years of her close apprenticeship with this Mazatec shaman and healer, as well as her training in other indigenous traditions, Françoise has developed a comprehensive approach that bridges Western and indigenous modalities. She trains therapists and facilitators and teaches at the California Institute of Integral Studies and lectures internationally. She is co-author with Christina Hunter of Consciousness Medicine, Indigenous Wisdom, Entheogens, and Expanded States of Consciousness for Healing and Growth. Join us for the next hour as we explore experiential therapeutic applications of expanded states of consciousness that lead to healing and transformation with our guest, Françoise Borzat. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Françoise, welcome.
Thank you.
I would love to begin a little bit of background of your story. You've traveled throughout the Americas and throughout the world, and that really started in Paris. You were, I think, born in France. Is that correct?
That's right. I was born and raised in Paris, France, and spent my youth there until I was 19, at which age after some studying of psychology in the University of Paris, I went to travel to the Americas for almost 9 months.
And as you traveled around, there are a couple of big happenings in your life, I think, that are worth talking about. One was when you were in Italy and you really descended into some pretty awful habits. And then another was in Thailand. And I'd love for you to share those two stories.
After my travel in South America, I came back to Europe and was pretty distressed. My father had passed away before my long travel to the Americas. And I came back to Europe in a state of depression and disorientation of what my life would be, and my family life had, of course, changed. I happened to meet some people who were Italian, and I went to live with them in Italy. Turned out that this person was a junkie. And out of depression and disconnection, really, of what was going on around me, I started to consume heroin. At the time, it was smoking it, snorting it. I never really injected anything. So I was on the periphery of that culture, but the environment that I had to work with or go and buy the substance or the people we were surrounded by were really challenging culture. And I was witnessing some situations that were really, really, really subhuman, like yes. something of a bad movie. So that was an important experience, which later on in my life as a counselor really served me to understand with maybe more compassion what some people could end up doing, not from their will or not from their rebelliousness necessarily, but rather from a sense of disconnection and disorientation and some poor surrounding. So that was the first experience, which was both challenging and also later on instructive.
Mm-hmm. And then you were rescued.
I was rescued. Someone literally went to get me physically and said, "I will take you back to France today." And I had to pack my bag and take the train.
What a wonderful friend. So then later, at some point, you ended up in Thailand traveling by yourself. Tell us about that.
So I was 23. The first episode around Italy was probably, I was 21, around 21, 20, 21. And so young and a little clueless about things. When I was 23, I was more solid. I had been living in Switzerland for a year and a half or so. I was working. I got some good friends. I was, you know, having some pretty healthy activities, and I was pretty solid then. And I went to travel to Thailand by myself. And I arrived in a place named Sukhothai, which is an old capital of Thailand, before Bangkok was the capital. And I was attacked by bandits, basically, on the road, on a country road, as I was walking with a newly met friend, gentleman that I had met visiting these temples. And they shot us. They shot us. I mean, literally, point blank. We were like 2 feet away from them. I mean, it was really... And my friend was shot in the head and died. And I was shot in the leg and survived. I lost my balance, of course. My body went into a state of shock. And they stole everything from us and left us for dead. And that experience, of course, was tragic, very traumatizing for me.
I think one of the moments that you describe in that, because it seems like the officials did find the attackers, mm-hmm. and there was some sort of lineup.
That's right.
And you had an epiphany as you faced the attacker. Can you tell us what that was?
Yes. On hindsight, of course, I was in a state of shock. It was 2 days after the attack. I don't know what my right mine or was, but when the police officer, the chief of police, rather, invited me to the police station to look at a lineup of possible suspects, whom apparently one of them was the culprit, or maybe two, they were not sure. I was having the choice to decide if I recognized someone. And as I looked at this gentleman, I couldn't see any of them, and then I saw him. I saw one of them, and I felt like at that moment I felt many things. You know, this one second when a lot of things happen all at once. And in that second I felt both my sadness for the overall state of a human being to not be able to see me and consider me as another human being. That dehumanization, what had happened in his culture or in his life that could not see me as valid, valuable. So there was a sense of sadness. And then when I had to identify him, I also felt this intense responsibility and sense of accountability that my decision could make him be alive or dead. And that moment really woke me to the fact that I didn't want to carry the death of another human being on my conscience, on my soul, for the rest of my life. I could literally send him to be executed. And I didn't want to do that. It was a spiritual awakening. It was a moment of consciousness that had been created from that episode. And just looking at him in the eyes, I felt that I didn't want to kill him. He had wanted to kill me, but that didn't mean I had to do the same. And that individuation, that separation from his decision and mine, was really important. And it really gave me a sense of compassion, or a sense of my choice for my life that are different from his choice.
Right, right. I just found that story just extraordinary. And now, how in that split second you could make that decision not to carry on in the way that he did. And I think that we could use that in our lives today. We can continue with that as we try and forgive those for the acts that they do, which are just horrendous in these days. So I would like to then go fast forward now. Somehow you're back, you end up on the west coast of California, and you're studying different things, and you're learning massage therapy and Hakomi, I guess, and other things, and you end up in southern Mexico and find this woman healer, shaman, teacher, and it's just an extraordinary thing. So we want to talk more about that in just one moment. I just want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Françoise Borzat, and she is the co-author of Consciousness Medicine, Indigenous Wisdom, Entheogens, and Expanded States of Consciousness for Healing and Growth. And her co-author is Christina Hunter. And if you want to know about her work, you can go to her website, françoiseborsat.com. And she spells her name F-R-A-N-C-O-I-S-E, Françoise Borzat, B-O-U-R-Z-A-T, françoiseborzat.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. Thank you. I'm here with Françoise Borzat, and we're talking about consciousness medicine, which is the title of her book. And we're just getting to the part of where you met Julieta. Tell us about her and how you met her and what work you did with her.
I met this gentleman named Juan. He was the owner of a little hotel in the Yucatan, south of Cancun in Mexico. And I was on vacation with my daughter. And I had been suggested to go to his hotel by a friend of mine and my husband and like that to have a safe vacation in a place where his friend had a hotel. So we arrive at this little hotel, and Juan and I start to talk about the past and our interests and all that. And I inform him that I've been doing some interesting exploration with some medicine men in California at the time, and assisting this work, right, to learn and be immersed in this practices and approaches. And he starts to tell me about his friend, Julieta, whom he had met 28 years before when he was a teenager. And he starts to explain to me that Julieta lives in Huautla de Jimenez, which is the heart of this mushroom tradition, and the Mazatec people living there for millennia, practicing that sacred ceremony for millennia. And of course, I became extremely interested in meeting her, but it was not in my style to show up in a village and push myself into someone's life. This is not my style, right? I wouldn't do that. And so he said, well, I'll take you there. He offered to take me there, and he had heard from his friend that who sent me to that hotel that I was really serious about this approach, and I was seriously interested in helping, facilitating some processes in a way that was possible and legal. So he decided to take me to the town of Huautla de Jimenez, and him and I met a day in October. I don't remember the year exactly. I think it was 1998 or 7. And he introduced me to Julieta, who was a woman who was then 62. And she was a little Mazatec woman with these two braids, you know, on the side of her face. And she was very tiny and very strong and very fierce. And she had talked to her about me. She had, I think, called. There was a phone somewhere. And so she was expecting us, and she liked Juan very much. She had sort of adopted him when he was 15 and a hippie coming up to the magic land of the magic mushroom. And she had took him under, she had taken him under her wings to initiate in the sacred way of the medicine. So it was a wonderful meeting with her, and the rest is history, as we say.
So these journeys, and you took a journey then, a mushroom journey.
That's
with
right.
Her.
I stayed for a week, and she sat for me in three mushroom ceremonies during that week, every other night, and that became an amazing turning point, both for my personal process and understanding of my own healing, because she was a woman and she was a mother and she was a woman of the land, indigenous, which was very much resonant for me. Her approach was very caring and very hands-on. She would hold me, hold my hand, very much take care of me, talk to me during the experience. So there was that, and then the being welcomed into tradition was really a change for my work and my understanding of a culture that was very foreign to me, very mystical.
You know, of course, during the 60s in the U.S. and then even beyond, a lot of people have used these kinds of hallucinogens for recreation. Mm-hmm. You know, they go to a concert and they take ecstasy or something, or they do, you know, they're just doing something like that, and it's not in this ceremonial way. And I know that your book really outlines the importance of using this kind of medicine, we'll call it substance medicine, as a sacred ritual, and you're very, very careful with it, and you do certain things. So can you speak to that?
In traditional setting, all these medicines have been used for so long in sacred ceremonies. Nothing has ever been taken as a fun thing in those cultures. It can be mushroom, it can be ayahuasca, it can be African iboga, it can be peyote, it was a Native American church, or the witchels, it can be the San Pedro maestro in South America. Everything has always been in reverence to the earth, in prayers, and in a context where someone is in charge of the ceremony, in charge of the context, and charge of the safety of everybody. So, sure, the West or the North, I don't know, the modern world has sort of created a different culture around the usage of these substances. And it doesn't mean that people coming together and taking a walk in nature or having a dance party cannot benefit from taking something together, right? People take ecstasy or people take a little mushroom, and we know that there is a lot of fairly intentional and fairly safe environments where such events can take place. And it's not necessarily a negative thing, but it can be, as we know. There's a danger to that. But in this book, I pay attention to the context of a ritual and try to draw from this context and from those practices the ways in which we can support the usage in a more contemporary culture, less traditional, less indigenous, less rooted in a practice for millennia. So my interest is to bridge this traditional practice, at least this one, which is one I know, into a more modern world, modern industrialized world, so we can learn. We can learn from these very ancient practices. We don't have to reinvent the wheel and see what is beneficial, what is not beneficial, what are the practices that we ought to follow.
One of the things that you emphasize is that it might be very beneficial going into something like this, whether it's taking a substance or whether it's going on a vision quest or a sweat lodge or whatever it is, whatever modality it is, because it doesn't have to be a substance, but it mm-hmm. can be, that one goes into it with an intention. Mm-hmm. So can you speak to the importance of focusing on an intention and how that is beneficial?
Mm-hmm. Any technique that is used for expanding consciousness is in and of itself an interesting, fascinating exploration. And we can go into those places out of curiosity, out of not knowing what in us we can access. We don't know until we are there. However, with the context of a ceremony and the support of a guide, we can identify an intention, which means what is calling us into a ceremony? What is happening inside us that is really taking us into this meeting with this technique? Breath work, sweat lodge, vision quest, trance dance, right? Or substance ritual. What in us is calling for health, for healing, for restoration, for deepening, for a dimension of spirituality, or for an understanding of our place in the world? So what is the calling? And I think it's important to own, take responsibility, take accountability of what brings us into a situation.
So in that, having the intention, another thing is that when you go into some deep altered state, you do not have control over the experience mm-hmm. that shows up.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you state in your book, you say, there are no random experiences. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes they might be quite beautiful, but other times they can be quite difficult. And you go into a description of all the different kinds of experience
yes.
that you can have. So what can you say to someone who comes with an intention but then does not have control over what shows up?
That's right. Well, and I describe that in the book because we all know that some people called, you know, I had a bad trip or I went on a vision quest to connect with nature and I was really scared, or I went to dance with my friends and I found myself very lonely inside, or as I danced, I started to recover sexual abuse memory, and it's not a fun environment, even though we can expect all kind of wonderful experiences. So when we expand consciousness, we are, by definition, bringing a larger container for our experience of being a human being, which contains aspects of ourselves that we may not have seen before. We may not have seen our greed or our anger or repressed memories or our power, our vulnerability, our tenderness. Sometimes what we don't see is a good quality, right? It's not necessarily ugly. But expanding consciousness is making a territory in which more of us can be revealed. And sometimes what is revealed is challenging. And part of what we have to trust in this environment of being guided and being intentional is that whatever is being revealed is within the path of healing. So there's no random or there's no mistake to what reveals itself. Sometimes it's a beautiful thing, sometimes it's a challenging emotion, sometimes it's a very painful dynamic that's being revealed. And what is being revealed is ready to be revealed. And it's grist for the mill, as Ram Dass would say. It's grist for the mill. We are given from within our subconscious the material that we are ready to face and process.
So that's why having a guide, a trusted and an educated, trained guide is very helpful, because one never knows what's going to show up. And to have someone who's really trained to help in that, what you give a lot of voice to integration. Mm-hmm. To it's not just about, okay, I have this trip and I have this journey and I have this experience, but it's like, okay, now how do we bring it back into our life and into our daily practice, our daily relationships, and how we live in the world? We're going to talk about that in just one moment. I'm going to remind our listeners that I'm here with Françoise Borzat, and she is the author of Consciousness Medicine, Indigenous Wisdom, Entheogens and Expanded States of Consciousness for Healing and Growth. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Françoise Borzat, and she is the author of Consciousness Medicine, Indigenous Wisdom, Entheogens, and Expanded States of Consciousness for Healing and Growth. And the co-author is Christina Hunter,